Well, there, welcome back to Let's Talk Tottenham. Been away for a little while on holiday, and thankfully I didn't have to talk about the Newcastle result because that was fairly hideous. Man United result slightly better. Liverpool result was much better in parts, but the start and end absolutely terrible. So not a huge match to cheer about, and pretty much our season is done and dusted. Not much to play for apart from Europa Conference League. But thanks to everybody for watching. Glad to be back. Well, not glad to be back in the sense that I have to talk about Tottenham, but you know what I mean. Thanks for watching. Please get your comments in, questions, anything, things you want to talk about regarding Spurs in the comments section. Please hit the like. Please hit the subscribe as well. Really helps the channel. Really appreciate everyone doing that. Let's start off. I wanted to mention a word on Lucas Moura. I haven't seen a huge amount of abuse for him, which is very good. This is him after the Liverpool result. Yes, he made a mistake there, which cost us the game. But a lot of fans, certainly on Twitter, certainly the ones on Twitter who don't come onto the chats and don't watch the shows and don't appear on streams. And these aren't real fans as well. We'll scapegoat a lot of people and players. And Lucas Moura, I feared, would be the scapegoat. Thankfully, I haven't seen a huge amount of that. But we all remember what he did in Amsterdam. And he gets away with some stuff because of that to an extent. I'll always love Lucas Moura because of that Amsterdam night. But yes, he made a mistake. It was a terrible, terrible mistake. And he should be, you know, criticised for that. But at the end of the day, in that game, that Liverpool game, if we hadn't made three mistakes in the first, whatever it was, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, and gone 3-0 down, we'd have won that game fairly comfortably the way that we played. And then Lucas Moura's mistake and Jota's goal would have been a consolation goal just for them at home. Is he good enough? Probably not anymore. I think he's leaving at the end of the season and it is time to move on. Hopefully the last game of the season, certainly the last home game of the season anyway, he can get some minutes on the pitch and get a bit of an ovation. Like I say, for what he did in Amsterdam, but you never really hear him complain about anything. He's been on the fringes for a fairly lengthy amount of time. You never hear him complain saying, I want to play. I'm going to throw my toys out the pram. So he's a good professional and seemingly quite a nice bloke as well. So I just wanted to mention Lucas Moura. Yes, it was a mistake against Liverpool, but there were mistakes made far, far earlier in that game, which cost us that game. But it cannot be overlooked. It was a terrible, terrible mistake from him. Why he came on, that's another question, because Poro was playing quite well, I thought, certainly going forward and certainly in that second half. Then we come on to the issue that was all before that, the defence. Shambles is probably being a bit polite and bit kind. These are two of the culprits. Even Romero's looked awful in recent weeks. Dyer has been his name. Dyer, absolutely terrible. Dyer always stands off players and gives them the encouragement to shoot. I think it was Leicester in that 4-1 loss. He did that and completely blocked Fraser Forster's view of Iheanacho's goal, I think it was. And Forster had no chance. I don't mind the standing off and making them do something, but at some point, if the player keeps hold of the ball, you've got to engage. You can't just stand off forever. You can stand off at the start, see what you're going to do. As soon as they keep hold of the ball, okay, I've got to engage. And sometimes it is better to just go in for the tackle straight off without standing off. And then you have the other side of the coin where Romero just goes in too hard and too rash and too many opportunities when there's no need. AC Milan, he did two of those when there was no need to do that at all and got himself sent off. But Romero's been looking awful as well. I can't remember which game it was. I think it was Bournemouth where on his goal line in the corner and trying a little back heel to his one of his teammates rather than just getting rid of the ball. So even he's succumbed to this. And whether that's because he's covering too many people, Poro can't defend. Poro can't defend, but going forward, he's good. So is Romero trying to cover the right side and cover Eric Dyer as well? I think there's probably an element of that. I think Romero is a far, far better defender than Eric Dyer. I like Eric Dyer's attitude and you know, fight and will to win and everything like that. But skill wise, he's not there. And if we want to achieve anything with this team, you can't have Eric Dier in central defence, I'm afraid. It needs to be built around Romero. So get Romero on the right side of the three. If we're playing a three, or even if we're playing a two at the back, it doesn't, or a four at the back, it doesn't really make a difference. Romero needs a partner who's top quality. And you know, we always harp on back to it in Pochettino era, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, two top centre-backs. And they had each other as well if one of them got caught out of position. If Romero gets caught out of position, he's got Eric Dier. Or if he's not playing, he's got Davinson Sanchez. Ben Davies, he's good 6 out of 10 every game. But again, if you want to be winning things, you can't be having 6 out of 10s every game. You've got to be pushing the 8s and 9s. So we need a brand new defence, really. And the midfield has to take responsibility in that as well, in terms of the Liverpool game and the start of that, and the start of the Newcastle game and the first half against Man United. I can't remember which manager said it, but I think it might have been Johan Cruyff. One of his philosophies anyway. The goalkeeper is my first attacker and the striker is my first defender. So there's been elements in games where we've been pressing, or Kane has been pressing, but no one else has. And we know that a pressing game is a team game. You can't have one person press or even 9 people pressing. It's got to be the whole team. So the midfield has to press as well with the whole team, along with Kane, or no one presses. And against Liverpool, that we had a couple of people pressing in the midfield, no one else. So the midfield are miles away from the defenders. So as soon as Liverpool, in particular, played the triangle pass, 1-2s, completely took Højbjerg and Skip out of the game. Whether that's a tactical thing, whether that's players' thing, I don't know. But either way, it can't happen like that. You either press as a team or you don't press as a team. You don't have a couple of people pressing and the others not. It just isn't going to work. In the second half, well, Liverpool game in the end of the first half, last part of the first half, we obviously picked it up. Kane's goal and then looked like scoring. I think there's elements that Liverpool thought they'd coast to victory and took their foot off the gas and then gave us a bit of momentum, and we carried that momentum on. But we definitely played better in that second half. The momentum was with us, and then halftime happened. And a lot of the time, halftime comes at the wrong time when teams are in momentum. But yeah, we carried that on. We carried that on really well. And Liverpool didn't really have an answer until the last second when we gifted them a goal. But we should have got a point out of that at the very, very least, if not all three. But it looks like it was a good tactical tweak, certainly at the end of towards the end of the first half, when we started playing better by Mason with Son and Kane as a front two. One going long and running, that Son on the last man, and the other coming short, which is Kane, and doing what Kane does. Caused Liverpool all sorts of problems. I like to see that from the start against Palace and take the game to Palace rather than having to wait until we're 2-0 down, 3-0 down to start playing football. We'll come on to the Palace a bit later on. And again, please hit the like, subscribe, get your comments in if you're watching. Thank you very much for watching. But yeah, I think the defence needs a complete overhaul. The midfield, I think Skip's good enough, or will be good enough, so I'd build it around him. Bentancur, I've read, is out until November, which is obviously a huge, huge blow, because he is the first name on the team sheet in terms of that midfield, whether we're playing 2 midfield or 3. Set for him out as well, November, and it's going to take a little while for him to get back to match fitness. So I would have thought December, very late November, early December is when he's going to be fully at his peak again. And with the injury that he's had, is he going to be the same Bentancur that we had going in, flying into tackles and everything like that? Because that is a serious, serious injury. And a lot of players have had that injury and not really come back at all, and then just been almost forced out of the game. So I really hope that doesn't happen, because Bentancur is key for our midfield. Højbjerg, he gets a lot of flack as well. I mentioned scapegoats, but he ambles about a lot. When he does stuff well, he really does stuff well. When he does stuff badly, it kind of is fairly evident. Skip, is he trying to do too much and cover too many areas in midfield? Possibly, I don't know. We need a plan. And this comes to what we'll get onto later. We need a manager, whether that's Mason, who's going to get it full time, or if it's someone else coming in. We need the manager sorted out. It won't be sorted out this season. It'll be sorted out in the summer. But if we get in the Conference League, our season starts in July with the Conference League. So in some respects, with a new manager coming in, it would be better if we didn't get Conference League, because then the season starts in August and they get full pre-season rather than a bit of pre-season. And as we know, we don't generally buy players early. So then if we're in the Conference League, we're likely to be not making a sign until after we start the Conference League, which obviously isn't ideal either. But yeah, the defence... the defence needs sorting out. Whether you play in a three or a four at the back, doesn't matter. Porro can't defend. He'd be far better served as a winger. Emerson is a far better defender, although he's not the finished article by any stretch. I would be amazed next season if Jed Spence isn't featured in the team at some point. He's on loan at the moment, new manager coming in. I would expect it to be a young manager and a coach rather than one of these Conte, Jose types. I need ready-made players now. Udogie on the left, I can't imagine anything other than he's coming straight into the team. Whether Perisic stays or not, I don't know. Sessegnon, again, I mentioned Dier, I mentioned Davies. If you want to be winning stuff, I like Ryan Sessegnon, but he does good stuff, but not with any consistency, and you need consistency. You can't have an 8 or a 9 out of 10 every month or two. It's got to be fairly consistent, and a lot more consistent with that. So, unfortunately, I'd get rid of Sessegnon. I like him, but he's just not good enough. Same with Dier, get rid of him. Sanchez, there's talk about Sanchez is wanting by another team, in a foreign team. Any offer, get rid. But yeah, Porro can't defend, so I don't know how you sort that out, really, if you're going to continue playing him. He just can't defend. He goes missing. He's a good attacker, and he was putting some really good crosses in, causing Liverpool, certainly in the second half, all sorts of problems, which is why I was so surprised he got taken off for Moura. Maybe he picked up a knock or was just tired. I don't know. Perisic, he isn't the Perisic of 3, 4, 5 years ago. So, but he is an old head with experience. So would Udogie benefit from that? I think with an old head like that who's done everything in the game, you can only do anything. You can only benefit from that if you're a young player. But I thought Sessegnon would benefit as well, and it doesn't seem to be, although Sessegnon's injury seems to always be a source of issues. But yeah, and make Romero... can be a top player. He's got to learn not to go storming in all the time. But again, maybe that is because he's trying to cover too many people. Get quality defenders around him. Maybe he'll calm down and then we'll see the Romero that we all thought we have a proper defender here. And Jamie Carragher put in his Premier League team of the year. But at the moment, he's nowhere near that. But will we sort the defence out? I have no idea. I kind of feel at the moment like this. I know how you feel, Howie. I know how you feel. And the big question now is what will happen with Harry. He's got 1 year left on his contract when this gets to the summer. Will he re-sign? Will a bid come in and Levy accepts it? Or will he just run down his contract and go for free next summer? For the first time with Harry Kane, I'm not sure what will happen. Previously, I thought, but he's not going anywhere. With the Man City stuff, I thought he's off now. This time, I have no idea. I still think Man United will put a bid in. There's also this talk, if Pochettino goes to Chelsea, they'll put a big bid in as well. I'd be amazed if he goes to Chelsea, just because I still think he wants his Tottenham legacy and legend status, and I think he really, really risks that if he goes to Chelsea. Maybe he's not bothered about that. He's already kind of legend status because he's our all-time leading scorer, so he's always going to have that until someone comes along and breaks out, and that ain't going to happen anytime soon. But I'd be surprised if he goes to Chelsea. If he goes to Man United, are they going to win the league? Probably not. But they've had a much better shot at it this year than last year, but are they going to win the league? Possibly not. He might win a cup. But is that what he wants to win? Chelsea will have a good chance of, with their finances, of winning that league. Man City, obviously, with a team that would have won in the league. He won't go to Arsenal. There's no chance of him going to Arsenal. But yeah, what will happen with him? What will happen with him? He's a striker and a playmaker because we don't have one. If we could get James Maddison, that would be fantastic. But with Kane, I think it's who the manager is. And we all know he's good friends with Ryan Mason, but if you're wanting to win stuff, I mean, Mason could win stuff, You know, he's a bright young manager, but if you're Harry Kane, you want a statement kind of manager in, you want the Nagelsmanns in or people like that. With all due respect, you don't want Ryan Mason in, even though Ryan Mason could do a phenomenal job. But again, we don't have a director of football. We don't have a manager. So the club is in absolute chaos at the moment, and Kane must be thinking what is happening. Apparently, there's been talks with Daniel Levy. I'd love to know what was said in those talks between the two, whether that was get yourself sorted out, Daniel, or I'm leaving, or I'm leaving anyway. No idea what was said about that. One thing is for sure, if he does want to leave this summer, it's probably going to have to be a pretty big bid to tempt him away. The 120 million, which for a player, 29, 30, 1 year left, is anyone going to bid 120 million? Unless you're absolutely desperate. And that's where I can see Chelsea maybe bidding for that, but I'm not sure he'd go to Chelsea. Man United, I think, will test the waters with about 70, 80 million. Would you take that? I'm not sure. If you get a playmaker in, then that obviously sorts that problem out. But if you want to win stuff, you don't let Harry Kane go out of your team. A player of his calibre go out of your team with the amount of goals. He's guaranteed goals. If it weren't for Haaland setting records and everything, he'd be well on his way to getting the Golden Boot this season as well. In a team that, let's be honest, is not firing very well and has been carried even more so by him this season because of Son's dip in form. But yeah, it's a real interesting one with Harry. If he does go, do we need a new striker or do we stick with Charlison up top? He's had some injury problems as well, so that's slight worry. We don't have anyone else unless Dane Scarlett's going to be stuck into the first team or Troy Parrott, which I'm not sure about that. Although there is that, you know, that old adage, how do you know they're good enough if you don't give them a go? And that is very true. That is very true. I'm glad that Dane Scarlett has had some loan time at Portsmouth getting first team football. Doing quite well by all accounts. Richarlison, though, scores goals for fun for Brazil. He's got a much, much better midfield and supply line at Brazil. He kept Everton up when he was played striker last year with probably limited service as well, and a much more worse team than we've got at the moment. So he could definitely do a job there. I do think next season Richarlison could prove a lot of people wrong. I think that goal against Liverpool will do him the world of good. Would not surprise me if he scores against Palace this weekend. But if you lose Harry Kane, you've kind of got to make a statement, because it's a statement in itself letting Harry Kane go. You've lost, well, I think the best striker in the world. You've got to either get someone in directly to replace him, another proper quality striker. Tammy Abraham has been linked. Why don't we just sign every player and manager that's ever been on Chelsea's books and save everyone the trouble? Tammy Abraham's like Lukaku and like Adebayor for me. On his day, unplayable, never his day enough. Not sure he wants it as much as people like Harry, for example. Richarlison could play up there, but again, his injuries, we'd need another striker anyway. We've got two at the moment with Richarlison and Kane. Three if you include Son. So we'd need another one, I think. But if you got rid of Kane, got James Maddison in, would James Maddison come to Spurs if a bid was accepted, if we're getting rid of Harry Kane? It's a real, real conundrum for Levy, and he's only really got himself to blame. If he'd have really backed the manager when Poch asked for certain players and the rebuild, we wouldn't be in this mess. We'd be sitting really high up and challenging for leagues, I'm pretty sure of that. Because those managers, Poch, Conte, Jose, wouldn't have been asking for you and Mbappe's and 200 million on one player. They'd have been asking for players that fit their system within a realistic kind of budget. But he didn't do it. And he's only got himself to blame. And that's why there's a lot of purple and gold or yellow colours on Twitter, which is the Levy out kind of colours, and the protests are gathering pace. There'll be one on Saturday against Palace, so get yourself to that if you're a Levy out and you're going to the game. And then we come to the manager. So Mason at the moment, Alonso has crept in from nowhere. Company's still bandied about, but it's all at the moment about Alonso. He's suddenly from nowhere become the front runner. I don't know where that's come from. He is at Bayer Leverkusen at the moment, sixth in the Bundesliga. Apparently, since he's taken over, only Munich and Dortmund have got more points. So he's doing a great job there with the two teams to beat. Kind of keeping pace with him, I guess. But I don't know where it's come from. And will, if Liverpool come calling or someone else, will he just run off like Company? As soon as Man City come calling, he's off. It doesn't matter where he is or what he's doing. He'll leave as soon as Man City come calling. So that's why I wouldn't go with him. Mason's an interesting one. Tactically, he has made some tweaks which have helped. And certainly in the Brighton game. Was it the Brighton game or was that Stellini? The Man United game, sorry. I'm getting my managers confused. We've had so many this season. He made some substitutions which worked. Made a tweak with Son going up top with Kane as a two up top against Liverpool, and that worked. He's got to sort this stuff out where we just start so slowly. Three goals conceded against Liverpool. A carbon copy of the Newcastle game, different manager, same result. And Manchester United first half was terrible as well. Second half of those games, much, much better. So that's why Palace, I'd like to see us go out like we ended that Liverpool game. Well, not ended, we conceded the goal, but like we played in the second half, come out for the first half exactly the same way as Liverpool, we came out in the second half and take the game to Palace. So he's got to sort that out. But is he hampered by the shocking defence and the fact that, you know, he's only been there a little while? Takes time. We know that from Pochettino. His pressing style took over a year to come into play. The first season he was there, we were very, very inconsistent. And that was why he was getting that ready. So Mason's only been there a little while. So if the players haven't been pressing for the previous managers, it's very, very difficult to then flick a switch and get them all pressing as one unit in, you know, two games or, you know, a week or two since he's been there. I wouldn't be averse to Mason being manager. But again, if you got Nagelsmann and he wanted a player, there's a bit of influence there. Nagelsmann wants me. He's a known manager. Whereas Mason, not so sure on that. But Pochettino wasn't particularly well known when he joined us. Not in that kind of respect kind of level. But obviously what he did at Tottenham then boosted his name up. So Mason could do that as well. So if Mason got the job for 4 years, went on a Poch trajectory, got the players in that he wanted, so Levy listened to him, which, ignore that part for the moment. Let's just say Levy is listening to whichever manager he appoints, or is leaving it all to the director of football, whoever he appoints. And Mason had that Poch trajectory. Then after a couple of years, people would want to play for Ryan Mason. Realistically, Levy isn't going to change a thing. If he's not going to change for Conte and he's not going to change for Jose, he ain't going to change for Ryan Mason, Nagelsmann or anybody. So the manager is going to have to work with what he's given, which not ideal, is it? But, you know, Ryan Mason has shown himself, quite adept in terms of changing games with his tactical tweaks. I think it was actually Brighton where he brought Dan Juma on and Dan Juma kind of helped change the game. But it might have been Stellini. I'm getting my managers confused, like I said. But he has changed games, so he's not just, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and hope it changes. If something isn't working, he isn't averse to changing it and taking players out. My pick is still Nagelsmann. But there's talk that he wants too much money. There's talk that if we get him now, then we owe Bayern Munich all of this money. There's talk that he wanted the Chelsea job, but as soon as he found out they were talking to other people, he was like, I don't want it anymore. Ralf Rangnick has apparently told Nagelsmann to take the job, and other times he hasn't told him to take the job, depending on which paper you read, other papers you read or Twitter outlet that you read. Rangnick wants to be the director of football. Other times he doesn't want to be the director of football. So we need a director of football, and someone like a Nagelsmann is probably going to want a director of football before he commits to Spurs, if it is Spurs. So I think the plan at the moment is Ryan Mason, take control of the team, do as best as you can with the players that we got in the summer. We either know who we want and it's kind of signed and but not official yet, or we know who we want, so we're going to go and get them in the summer. I think it's probably that. But, and is there an element, if you announce it now, why Mason isn't going to be the manager, why bother playing for him if I'm on the fringes? Although, you'd want to be impressing the new manager if you knew one was coming in. So, again, like the Harry Kane situation, I have no idea what would happen. When we got Poch, the manager before that, I can't remember who that was. Yeah, it's pretty poor, isn't it? Pretty poor. Poch was brought in pretty much instantly. Same with Redknapp when Ramos got fired. Redknapp was brought in instantly. Now, we have no idea what's going on. When Poch was fired, Jose was brought in the next day as well. So there was a plan there of what was happening. We haven't got a plan at the moment. So how can you expect the players to know? There's no communication with the fans. So the fans are frustrated, don't know what's happening. We got told 3 years ago or so, we're going back to the Spurs DNA, which is attacking football. And since then, we've had Nuno and Conte, two defensive managers. So I would bet money it would be an attacking manager. Mason is an attacking manager in the sense that you've seen the second halves. So much different from the Conte ball, if you want to call it that, and how Nuno played. Nagelsmann, definite attacking manager. De Zerbi at Brighton, attacking manager. Company, probably quite an attacking manager, but yeah, he's got an emphasis on defence as well because he was a defender. Alonso, I'm not too sure about him, but you would have thought that would be fairly attacking because of where he played midfield. So I'm adamant it will be a young manager, an up-and-coming manager, and it will be an attacking manager to go back to that DNA. But it's never going to work. No manager is going to work unless Levy listens to what they want and gets them what they want. Scott Munn and Levy were at London Airport last week. So I pictured there last week. Were they going to Germany to speak to Nagelsmann? Were they going to wherever Poch is to speak to him? I'm surprised he hasn't been announced Chelsea manager now. It's all... Last week, when I was on holiday, all done and dusted. It's just a matter of time. And then all of a sudden now, it hasn't been mentioned at all. So does that hit a snag? Was it never a thing in the first place? I don't know. But the whole manager thing for Spurs is all open to speculation. It's not going to be sorted out until the summer and after the season finishes. There might be something inviting, you know, a handshake, a verbal agreement, which is apparently what Poch has had with Chelsea. But again, we haven't heard anything about that since. So there might be a verbal agreement with someone, and it's not going to be announced until after the season to try not to take the players' focus off the season ahead and the last four games. We don't know. But yeah, up to Palace. Now to Palace. We've got them at home, and they were the first team that we ever played in that new stadium. I've seen them quite a few times there because I went to that game, and I'm going on Saturday. They're rejuvenated. They won 6-0 the other week. I can't remember who it was against, but I think it might have been Leeds. And definitely rejuvenated under Hodgson. You get the new manager bounce when a new manager comes in. And this is a guy who knows Crystal Palace. He managed them before. And yeah, they beat Wolves 5-1. Maybe I'm getting a 6-0 wrong. Yeah, I think I am. I'm not sure who won 6-0. But they beat Leeds, and a fellow struggler. 5-1 away from home as well, which is equally as impressive. I'm thinking of Brighton. They won 6-0 the other week, didn't I? That's who I'm thinking of in the 6-0. Who did they beat 6-0? They beat... And I can't find it. Oh, dear. How embarrassing. Anyway, they won 6-0 at home, so that's who I'm thinking of. But a 5-1 for... Palace as well against Leeds, and it's going to be a real tough game. You know, it's got them attacking, got them playing. Wolves, Brighton beat 6-0. That's who it was. He's got them playing really well, and they're away from relegation. They won't get relegated, so they've not really got any pressure. We're out of the Champions League race. There's no way at all now. get fourth. We're seventh at the moment. Villa breathing down our necks, and we play them next away. So that's not going to be easy either. They're on fire under Emery at the moment as well. So that's going to be a real, real tough game. If we don't start well in that game, it's going to be another start like the Newcastle and Liverpool games. So, yeah, we need to win this game, really. If we've got any desires to getting into Europe, whether that's the Conference League or scraping into the Europa League, if extra places go to the league, I don't know. We have to win this game. And if we start off slow, like we have done, we put ourselves at a massive disadvantage again. We have to start quick. We have to start quick. Will we? I'm not sure. In terms of how will the game pan out, in my view anyway, I don't know. You know in the first 2 minutes what kind of half Spurs are going to have, whether they're going to sit back and invite pressure on. It usually starts off quite well with the first minute. We're all bombing around and putting our bodies on the line, and then after a minute it slows down and stops. Like I said, please, Vine, start and the players, start the game like you started the second half against Liverpool and Man United. Go for the jugular. Go for the attack. Palace, I would imagine, will be expecting us to start slow and will attack us. So therefore, play them at their own game. Keep them off guard. Get them off guard. Palace haven't got anything to lose, really. No one's regardless of how we're playing, I would imagine no one expects Palace to really do anything. And I would expect people expect us to be the favourites. But we need to start quickly. I'm expecting a lot of Levy out chance. Whether there'll be the Pochettino magic, you know, chance, I'm not sure. I imagine there'll be a lot of Levy out chance. If we end up losing or are losing, I think they'll vamp up. But yeah, we need to start off quick. And I have no idea if we will. Forster will be in goal, obviously. I expect him to keep the same defence. I mean, Emerson's injured. We haven't got Doherty. We haven't got Spence. So really, Porro is the only wing back we can have. Although Tanganga can play there and he's a lot more defensive. I'd put him in. Perisic will be on the left. No one else again. And I would imagine it'll be Dier, Romero, Davies in the middle. Recipe for disaster. Certainly with one of those. Skip Højbjerg. And then it's who plays up front with Kane and Son. Kulu has been really off the ball. I'd stick Richarlison in just because he got that goal against Liverpool. So he'll be buzzing to try and get another one. And if you want to start quick, you have players like Richarlison in because he will put 110% in, will chase things down. And that will hopefully filter through the rest of the team. That's what I'd start with. Whether he will, no idea. Kulu's really been off the boil, so it might be a good idea to take him out of the firing line for a little bit. But yeah, short show this week. Not really much else to talk about how the game pan out. I have no idea. I'll tell you after 2 minutes because that will be be a good indicator of how the game will pan out. But yeah, there'll be a show on Monday regarding that, how the game happened, and then a preview to the Villa game as well. I should have guests on for that one. Fridays are my solo stream just because I'm at work lunch. Mondays will be where guests are on. But Villa's a huge, huge game. If we can end up winning this Palace game, then it's an even bigger game. But if we lose that Villa game, we'll either sink like a stone and drop even further, or we'll just end up consolidating eighth place. It's a real, real tricky one. Really tricky what will happen in those games, first and foremost, but also the summer. It's going to be a massive summer for Spurs. Will Kane stay? Will he go? Who's the new manager coming in? Or is it Mason who's just going to get a permanent role? Or who do we get as director of football? What players come in? What players go out? And it's going to be a huge, huge, huge summer. But that lasts for another show. That's this show. Thank you for watching. If you're listening on the audio, on the podcast, thank you for listening. Please, if you're watching, hit the like, hit the subscribe and notification bell. Really helps. Jump over to Chris's Magic as well. Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. UK time, new trick drops or a tutorial. I'm going to mix and match. I'll be back here on Monday, 7:30 p.m. UK time. Catch us there. And as always, Come on, you Spurs.
Thanks so much for watching. For everybody who joined in the live chat and added comments, before you go, please leave a like and hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Also, please hit that notification bell. That'll give you a notification every time we're about to go live, and it's all completely free. For those who missed the live show, you can catch this whenever you want on Let's Talk Tottenham's YouTube channel. Please also hit the like, subscribe and notification bell. And everybody, please leave feedback, comments, suggestions in the comments section on the YouTube videos. For those of you who listen to the audio podcast, thank you so much for listening. Anyone who wants that audio podcast, you can pick that up wherever you get your podcast from. We're back Mondays, 7:30 p.m. UK time, and Fridays, 12:30 p.m. UK time. Alternatively, if you go to Twitter at Let's Talk Tottenham, Instagram, Let's Talk Tottenham Podcast, you can find all the information there. Anyone who wants something a little bit different, also do a magic show. So I do one trick a week, which drops Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. UK time. Chris's Magic on YouTube is where you'll find that. But in the meantime, come on, you Spurs.